Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship for the podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
Hey, Chris, how you doing? Another week.
Yeah, here we are. I tell you, I think this is now our third episode that we're going to be focused on some aspect of transportation. About a month after we worked with LA Metro. And, you know, just transportation is so critical. You know, here the summers, the snowbirds leave, so it's not as bad. But boy, I'll tell you, come fall when all the students are back in school and all the people come back that were out of town, it just reminds you traffic starts building up and, I don't know. So there's just unique ways, not to mention the allure of a city like New Orleans and representing such a, everyone knows New Orleans, but it's not that big of a city. So it'd be fun to see kind of what's going on in that aspect. That's kind of where my head's at. How about you?
Yeah, you're so true. I mean, I've been in the smart city space for, I can't even count now, but you're right. Everything seems to revolve around transportation and mobility. I mean, it is the lifeblood of cities, right? It's how it is now becoming, you know, how are we going to get people access to jobs? Well, we got to think about mobility and transportation. How are we going to get them to healthcare? We have to think about transportation, mobility, right? It's everything is really revolving around transportation and mobility. And I think it might become the connective tissue for smart cities, right? When you're doing certain projects, there's always a transportation mobility aspect in it. So I think that's why we're starting to, you know, see, I think probably a little too late, these organizations, these transportation agencies, these departments start to rise to the forefront of innovation in cities. And so it's exciting. I'm excited to learn more. So how do you know our guest?
Well, it's funny. I don't know Laura, Brian. As people see when we explain how we know the guests, either one of us usually knows one of the guests. But we kind of were looking out there. I do a lot of research. You see, you know, cracks and paper, we're always looking for articles and whatnot. But I was looking out there and just kind of reading some updates of who was speaking where. And New Orleans kept coming up and transportation and Laura. And so I just reached out. And she was very accommodating to get on the show and tell the story of what they're doing. And that's basically it. So I'm assuming you don't know Laura either, since I'm not cool.
I do not. Yeah, I know.
I just think that there's a fresh perspective in the research I was prepping for the show. There's so much going on there. So I think she's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm excited to hear. Sorry. Yeah, I've been in a couple of conferences or networking events with their CIO, Cam, tremendous leader down there too. So excited to hear Laura's story.
Great. Well, let's get her on.
Awesome, let's do it.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for joining us. Please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
No problem. It's going to be a fun conversation. What we found through the show, one of the great things to start with is just background about you. Tell our audience, you know, what it is to know about Laura and, what you as an individual, kind of how you got to where you are. We'll talk about, you know, what you're doing at New Orleans now in a minute, but
Sure. So first, thank you guys for having me. It's a real privilege to be talking with you guys about the work that we're doing. I feel like there's very few times where we can have informal conversations sort of about what we're looking at. And I really appreciate this opportunity. My name is Laura Bryan. I'm the director for the Mayor's Office of Transportation. So a little bit about my background. I am from New Orleans. I grew up in New Orleans. I have lived in a couple other cities. I lived in Seattle for a brief period of time while I was growing up.
I'm from Seattle.
Yeah, really? Yeah, it was such a great, it was a really informative sort of period of my life. In middle school, I lived there. And then I came back to New Orleans for high school. And I went to college at University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia, and then lived in DC for a while doing a couple different things. I feel like that was sort of a natural trajectory for so many people my age, sort of out of college. And, you know, really felt that call to come home. I think a lot of New Orleanians do. A lot of people have a big love for the place that they live in. And so now I'm getting to do this work. And I feel like, you know, it's so rewarding. There's all kinds of crazy things that we face every day that we deal with. But at the same time, it's such a privilege to get the opportunity to really represent people in New Orleans and serve them on a day-to-day basis. So that's a little bit about me. My focus is in transportation. I have spent some time in transportation before. You know, I had a pretty close relationship with the mayor when she became mayor because I worked for her as a director of land use policy for a few years before she made the transition. She was serving as a city council member then. And previously to that, I had been working in the city planning commission. So I was really focused on really land use policy and development, and transportation was sort of a natural wedge and fit for that. And when she took office, there was interest in sort of elevating transportation. The city had a significant amount of dollars to redo all of our street infrastructure. It's a $2.4 billion project. And what we were told is that the money for the street infrastructure was really not to improve upon the street infrastructure, but basically to replace what was there. And so we've been leading sort of an internal charge to really elevate the conversation around how people get around. You know, New Orleans was hit by this horrible storm, Hurricane Katrina, that everybody knows about. And in many ways, we sort of recovered very quickly. In other ways, we are really taking our sweet time figuring out how to move things forward. We're still spending the money that we got post-Katrina on these roads, and it's not going to be spent for another, I think, like 5 years. Oh. So it's taking a really long time. Sorry if I'm breathing.
No, this is really interesting. I can see Dom writing. I'm taking notes furiously. But it's also, as you kind of hear that background and what you're doing and how that money came, when you're doing a replacement project, I can't imagine how land use and city planning expertise in your background would help you figure out how to align kind of a transportation infrastructure that's going to take New Orleans and the region into the future. That's really, really exciting. So talk a little bit about what you're doing now. Like what does it mean to be Director of Mayor's Office of Transportation for New Orleans, where you're focused on this big project, kind of. I know we'll get into some of the specific programs we found on your sites and whatnot, but anything you want to add for that for context?
Yeah. So I think I mentioned it briefly. So when the mayor took office in 2018, she created this Office of Transportation really to elevate the conversation, really to focus on how we're moving people throughout the city. There previously really wasn't a focus on that. And so what we do is we cover sort of all of those different modes, and our direct call is to bring whatever we need to the mayor if things don't seem to be going in the direction that we would want them to go in. But ultimately, our goal is to implement the Moving New Orleans Transportation Action Plan. So we released the Transportation Action Plan a year after we took office. It's really a culmination of a bunch of different plans. The city has a master plan. The city has a climate action plan. You know, the city has, the RTA has a strategic mobility plan. Our RTA is our regional transit authority. So it's sort of a culmination of a bunch of different plans that already existed. We sort of populated with the things that are most important to the mayor. So that's safety, really improving roadways and our conditions for safety. It's connectivity, really connecting folks You know, we have two neighborhoods in New Orleans that have traditionally seen a significant amount of disinvestment, just haven't been the top priority. They're really sort of suburban. They're geographically distanced from the core of New Orleans. And so connecting, getting those folks better connected to the city's core, which is where all of our jobs are, was very critical to the mayor. And actually just putting infrastructure dollars into those areas. So those are New Orleans East and Algiers. They're sort of top priority locations. So we work a lot on trying to, it's a number of things I would say, but really like we play a coordinating role. We implement our transportation action plan. We help facilitate when other departments maybe don't have capacity. So in some cases, in many cases, our Department of Public Works is entirely understaffed. And that's a big problem. And so when there are projects that pop up and they say, you know, we're really not equipped to handle this, we really can't take this on, we will try to facilitate in some capacity. In the same way, even our Homeland Security Department will sometimes say, we don't have capacity, this is a transportation thing, we really need help. In which case we would jump in and sort of help them navigate whatever that may be. In there's a lot of different situations. You know, right now we're sort of in hurricane planning mode, right? Hurricane season started. We are trying to make sure we have everything set. That's a big coordination effort with the Regional Transit Authority. And so we've been making sure that those connections have been made, that their agreements are all signed, that the evacuation contracts with our bus providers are getting completed, things like that. So sorry if I rambled a bit on that question.
No, it's great stage setting. I do have one before I turn over to Dom. I know he's jumping a bit for some questions. I heard you say when the mayor created this office, are you familiar? We had about a month ago, we had guests on from the LA Metro. Do you collaborate with them at all?
Oh, you know, I don't personally collaborate with them enough, but I'm actually, I have a call into them through C40 to talk to them about their transit-oriented communities work. They did a really, really fantastic job with their transit-oriented communities work, and we've been trying to get in touch with them. And I don't know if you're familiar, but Alex Wiggins, who's our director at the Regional Transit Authority, he was hired in 2019, and
He doesn't have a relation. They just took on a new leader, a woman named something Wiggins. They're not related, are they?
I don't think so. No,
that's funny.
I wouldn't think so. but he came from LA Metro. So he's always talking about, you know, when we were at LA Metro, we did this. He was in security. I think he was over security, which was really great for New Orleans because the NOPD has been like, what have you been doing? Like, this is amazing.
Well, we'd be happy to make introductions. We had Joshua Schenck and Nolan Bergman. But why I was kind of smirking when I was hearing you say, hopefully you guys don't have a little professional jealousy. When they created their department, they called it the Office of Extraordinary Innovation. I that's amazing.
Oh, I love that.
Right?
Raising the bar.
We talked a lot about, like, shall we call ourselves, like, director of giving a shit? Like, that's my language. But
all right. The competition is laid.
I love
make
it.
Some introductions.
Well, no, Laura, I love this background because I'm more of a city guy. I like to really think about governance models. And, you know, what we try to do through the show is try to provide advice to mayors, city managers that are, you know, newly establishing maybe smart cities programs or even, you know, programs such as yours. So I really kind of want to just double click real quick. So this Office of Transportation, I mean, we all know transportation mobility is so crucial to almost everything that we do as residents and citizens, right? Whether it's healthcare, jobs, you know, connectivity. So you're saying that the mayor came in and kind of elevated the focus around transportation and mobility by creating this new office to be almost like this agile task force. And as you mentioned, to kind of help where needed, but also to elevate the role of transportation and the conversation of transportation within the community. Is that kind of the gist of
exactly?
I mean, exactly.
I that was so well spoken. I wish I could write that down and use that as my elevator pitch next time because I think
let's record it. You got it.
That was spot on.
Well, it's incredible.
And solve some of the stuff that happened from Katrina, right? The distancing of the community from the jobs. Like I thought, Dom's queuing in right on, because that's what America knows, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope the other leaders around, you know, around the country really cue in on that too, because oftentimes, I think, as you mentioned, public works departments, when transportation mobility just gets shoved into one department, they're so, you know, they're short staffed, they're limited resources. And so they don't really have the opportunity to elevate the conversation like you can when you have a dedicated office to this. So I just hope our listeners really cue into that. I think it's well structured and could be a model for other.
You know, for New Orleans, I think it's really worked well for a lot of reasons. I mean, partially our regional transit authority is not a part of the city. It's technically a state entity, similarly to our sewage and water board. And so bridging that connection is sort of difficult. And when the mayor's office, we're more nimble and more able to sort of say, hey, you guys need to speak a little bit more about your projects and, like, you know, what you're doing on the street. It's easier for us to sort of facilitate that relationship than exactly what you're saying. I think those engineers and those technical folks, they're just trudging through the workload. They're trying to get stuff done. And it's sort of difficult to think sort of broader picture, even escalate things in a way that, like, makes them become a real priority. You know, they may see something and say, well, I don't have sort of time to deal with it. And, you know, that's not the number one thing to bring to my director. And yeah, our communications department doesn't have time to handle that. So it really, I think the way you described it as a task force, I think is almost exactly it. Like, that's exactly what we do. We sort of dive in where we need to. And really, I mean, part of that is about getting more resources for the folks that are doing the work, you know. Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, we would love to see transportation sort of institutionalized and we wouldn't need this sort of entity. I think it's pretty common for mayors to say, you know, when they take office, like, here are my top priorities and I'm going to, like, elevate these things. For our mayor, that's youth and families, it's housing, it's utilities, it's transportation. And really, like, our cultural economy, she's really elevated that as well, like making sure that they're getting enough resources.
That's awesome. Well, that's great. I love the model and hope others will hear the advice as well. So Laura, you've highlighted on your transportation side an initiative called Moving New Orleans. Can you help our audience understand what that means and where is it taking New Orleans?
So, yeah, our transportation strategy, again, it's just sort of a culmination of a bunch of different plans. And its real focus is safety, it's connectivity, it's equity. And I'm forgetting one, and I can't remember the last one. Efficiency, sorry. We had a bunch more planned for efficiency that we haven't been able to accomplish, unfortunately, simply because that is so, there's so many things with efficiency that are stuck within DPW, you know, like building resources has been our major need really in some of that work. But honestly, I mean, the goal is to what you said earlier, basically better connect people to jobs, better connect people to the things that they need to get to. I mean, there's a real interest in reducing the amount of automobile trips. Our climate action plan asks basically to reduce the amount of automobile trips by 50% by 2030. And so we are trying to build a network of 75 miles of protected bike lanes. It's a collaboration between us and between Department of Public Works. We are trying to improve transit. We just did this really broad, big study on transit called New Links. Mm-hmm. And it actually just completed. So it took about a year and a half. It was a really large sort of planning study where we looked at every single line. It's a comprehensive operations analysis is sort of the technical term. But we looked at every line to see how it was performing and to see what opportunities sort of existed to improve the whole network and the whole system. And so we're really excited about that work. There was so much community participation in it, and especially during COVID, which was very difficult to do. I think the project team did a really great job with that. So those are sort of two of the really big things that we're tackling. I mean, there's a bunch of sort of smaller things right now. We're trying to handle electric vehicles. How do we handle electric vehicle charging stations and the new interest in electric vehicles that we think will happen in New Orleans, that we're seeing, the trends that we're seeing. And so we've been partnering with Entergy to figure that out and move that forward. And they're actually going to be putting 50 charging stations on city property coming soon. Yes. Sorry.
Any early findings on kind of where, what shaping, how you're looking at electric bikes?
Yeah. I mean, so there's been so many studies out that say, you know, the progression of electric vehicle, electric vehicles is just going to continue to increase. New Orleans really wants to be prepared. Our sense is like, how can we best prepare for this transition? And so we convened a steering committee. We've been meeting for, I guess, like since about November. And the steering committee has helped us look at what we're looking at when we're putting in an electric vehicle charger. I think the city's ultimate goal would be to provide electric vehicle charging for no cost. And so this partnership with Energy is an exciting one for us. We're doing 50 chargers with them. We launched a public input survey that ran for 60 days, and we got a lot of interesting feedback from that. So most of the people that filled out the survey were potential EV owners. They weren't actual owners already. And we thought that that was really neat because it shows you that people are just really interested in seeing this technology and being able to use it. You know, what we know is that most people charge at home, right? Yeah. So like, I think it's like 80% of the charging time is folks at home. And so, you know, we've been working with Energy to say like, well, maybe we can figure out a way where you guys are somehow subsidizing this or providing better infrastructure at home or something. We want to make sure that there's publicly accessible stations. There's a big interest in having sort of like the marketing aspect of having a charging station in a really visible sort of high trafficked area. So people like don't have as much range anxiety about buying an electric vehicle. One of the big things is like, well, where can I charge? We want to make sure we reduce that as much as possible.
And how do I protect my investments? They're expensive. And one of our guests, cul-de-sac, it's a driverless community, carless community, sorry, 17 acre location here in Phoenix called the cul-de-sac, and Lava Sunder was the speaker. I know her CEO has a personal interest in electronic bikes in a big way. He has like this garage full of 20 different types. And they believe that that will be the connective tissue in a way from the suburbs in, because you can, it's kind of like the last mile from the bus stops to that and all sorts of things. So it's interesting your focus there.
Yeah, well, so you're saying electric bikes?
Electric bikes, yes.
Yeah.
So I know you're talking about electric vehicles as well, but like the mix between electric vehicles, electric bikes, like there's just an interplay. I know we're going to dig in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was just going to tell you our Blue Bikes. So we had a little situation with our bike share system. Uber had it. It was under Uber. Uber sold Jump, which was the company that was managing it, to Lime. Lime wanted to drop scooters. New Orleans had previously said, you know, we're not ready for scooters. There's a whole bag of worms around scooters, which we probably don't need to go into. But the main point is that our roads are in such poor condition and we have such an entitled car network and so many traffic incidents that the scooters were just not going to work for us. So we ended up pulling that whole program from Lime, and now a nonprofit is running it. They're called Blue Crew, and they're getting ready to launch the new Blue Bikes bike share as of September 1. Yes. We're really excited about that, but they're all going to be electric bikes. So right before Uber sold Jump to Lime, they had just launched a bunch of electric bikes, e-bikes. And what we saw is that people seem to really like them. They go really fast, but they keep up with the car traffic much better. So they almost, people were saying like, they're almost better on the road because you don't feel as vulnerable because you're going at a faster speed. Like you're not slowing down everybody quite as much as you would if you don't have that protected bike infrastructure, right, and you are traveling in a vehicle travel lane. So they recently showed us sort of what was going to be on the stations. They're having to put new artwork on the stations, and it was like electrify us or something with electric. And I thought that was really neat because it was sort of a play on like electric vehicles too, which happens to be just really trendy right now. We're seeing the Biden administration wanting to spend a lot of money on electric vehicles. And so I thought that was neat. I also think, I mean, New Orleans is a city whereby you could really, really get around by bike. I think a lot of people do. We know that. It happens to be in the area that's just more connected to those job centers, like the downtown, the core. I don't know how familiar you guys, have you all been here before?
Handful of times, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know we have like the French Quarter, which is its own sort of situation. The mayor was really interested in removing cars from the French Quarter. And it was a wonderful project. There was a lot of sort of public input on that. There was a lot of planning coordination, and ultimately, nothing really moved forward. It's not to say that it won't move forward, but those, that was kind of pulled to a halt for a bit. And I think, you know, out of the quarter, you also have like Bywater Marigny, which is still along the river. You've got these neighborhoods sort of along the river, and then you have your downtown area that are really, really old. And so the density is high. You know, you have these shotguns, these double shotguns, one after another. So getting around by bike where you can't park your car is great for New Orleans. I mean, we're really trying to figure out what those corridors, those primary corridors can be for those neighborhoods. And move forward. And I think we have some ideas, but
that's awesome. And you mentioned it's going to be run by a nonprofit now. Is that a local nonprofit?
It is. So we have this very large sort of local nonprofit called Greater New Orleans Foundation, and they are it's a subsidiary of them. So Greater New Orleans Foundation took it on to run the bike share program, and they created Blue Crew. I think that tie has become more severed now that Blue Crew has become more of its own entity. Yeah. Over the past few months, you know, they received their sponsorship. They've gotten more money, but yes, it's the Greater New Orleans Foundation.
I love that model of a kind of a foundation coming in almost to kind of seed, you know, a new company, a new organization, but for the betterment of New Orleans and its people to get around. I love that.
Yeah. It speaks directly to Greater New Orleans Foundation's mission, which is to really support mobility and transportation, really support people who need the most support. And so they were a really great partner. But what we found, you know, we did a lot of research around the best models for bike share programs. And it was so interesting to me because it's bike share is at an interesting place now, right? So you had a significant amount of interest, a ton of investment sort of 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and it was just kind of like getting on the streets. And I think that interest is sort of waning. And so people are having to figure out like what to do. Fortunately, we still have a sponsorship, but we spoke with the folks in Philadelphia. We spoke with the folks in some other places. And it was just interesting to hear their models. You know, some people had gone back because sort of what we did with Uber was contracted out essentially and then had this big national company. And what we heard is in some cases having this big national, international company is better than having sort of a local entity. We felt like New Orleans is really unique. You know, we have just a unique population. We like punch way over our population. We're tiny. We have less than 400,000 people, and yet we're kind of one of the larger perceived cities because of our tourism industry. So we figured we were really unique and that we wanted to try and sort of like bring it to local. So locals can be more of a part of it. It's more representative of the community, which we always felt like was a struggle when we were dealing with that larger entity.
If you can cut car rides by 50% and biking is a big theme in that, I mean, you're going to set the stage for other cities to follow. It's really exciting.
We're trying. I mean, 50% is an ambitious goal. We just like released sure the draft update and we were like, okay, here we go. Like, let's see if we can do it. You know, we're really improving transit too. I mean, significantly through this New Links project that I explained. I think that that's going to be huge. The other thing that we're doing is really working on getting our kids back on the buses. That's sort of like, it's not like a public thing yet. And there isn't really a lot of the discussion is really internal, but we're seeing how that can work. Pre-Katrina, we had a lot of our school age kids taking the bus. When I was in Seattle, I took the bus a lot to school. And we're trying to figure out if that's possible again, if we can make that transition. I don't know if y'all are familiar with this, but the school network in New Orleans is a charter school network. So all of our schools have their own charter that they're hanging with the state and with New Orleans Public Schools.
Well, and that was accelerated post Katrina, right? I did read a little bit about the charter infrastructure that went really fast after Katrina. Okay.
Yeah. So it allowed the schools to recover much more quickly, right? Because they each were sort of their own charter entity, I think, at that time. post-Katrina, maybe NOLA Public Schools was still running a few, but most of them were charters, and it allowed them to come back much more quickly and be more elevated, I think, than they had been previously. But
they probably didn't invest in bus routes because that's expensive infrastructure, right?
Exactly. And the problem with that is that each of the charter entities have to pay their own transportation costs. So they're all paying a large percentage of their budgets on busing all their kids. And they have private, you know, they have to contract out to private school bus companies, yellow school bus companies for a time. It's an unfortunate situation because the schools are losing so much money on these contracts, right? Like those are dollars that could be spent in the classroom, but they have to be spent on moving the kids around. And we also think that the routing and just the programming is probably not the best. There's probably a lot of opportunity to improve that system. Kids are going from really far out to certain schools. You know, buses are relatively empty taking some of these kids to school. They have to get up extremely early in the morning. So that's something we're just sort of starting to scratch the surface on researching and figuring out, like, okay, what is going on here? And like, what are the opportunities and who might be interested in improving this? We really think that there could be an opportunity with the RTA. Now, RTA's fleet is half the size it was pre-Katrina, and that's when we had more school-age kids on the bus. So that's a problem. But the more we can grow ridership, the more buses we can support. So it all kind of works together.
Now, you did reference New Links a couple of times, and RTA is New Orleans Regional Transit Authority. Make sure our audience understands kind of what New Links does and doesn't, and just be clear. So, like, will New Links help connect this charter network? Is it really meant to kind of connect other areas beyond, like, really drive it home? So I think one of the things we've found is sharing the stories that get a city to see where the interplay between other adjacent cities are they resonate really well.
So the New Links project started as this comprehensive operations analysis. That's really where you take a deep dive into the lines, look at each route, really understand what's happening, how much ridership is on the route, who it's serving. And so they did that. And it was really, really informative. The biggest piece, I think, of New Links was really this community outreach effort that was so robust. I mean, they connected with the community who's riding the bus, the community who's not riding the bus. There were series and series of public meetings, the goal of which is to analyze the system, right? Like, let's take a step back. Let's look at our system. Let's see where there's room for improvement. That's the goal. And they found a lot of opportunity for improvement, sometimes just in the scheduling. You know, maybe on certain routes, they had a significant amount of ridership. To the point where buses were always crowded and they would say, you know, this route needs to become more frequent. For example, St. Charles streetcar, right? Everybody probably knows who's been to New Orleans knows what the St. Charles streetcar is. So the St. Charles streetcar its schedule is not optimal, right? That's what they figured out from New Links. This schedule is not working because we're wasting money. We're putting too many cars at this certain period in the evening when no one's really riding it. So maybe some people who are locals who are taking it home from work or whatever are riding it, but they don't need it to come every 10 minutes. They need it to come every 30 minutes or maybe every 45 minutes. And so by scaling the streetcar back during that time, we can increase frequency another time when it's totally packed. Just sort of right-sizing the line allows us to save money ultimately and just better connect people. So that's one thing. There's a lot of sort of tweaks that New Links is recommending. And that piece, that St. Charles streetcar piece, is actually getting implemented this summer. So there were a number of just sort of like route time changes that New Links found, the project found. And RT is like, let's just move and implement these. Like, this is cost savings. This is going to help people. Like, we don't need to do a whole lot. And there's other situations where you have new routes created, right? There's not a ton of that, but there is some of that. And that mainly is in like New Orleans East. So the area I was talking about before, New Orleans East, that's a priority location for the mayor. So a little bit about New Orleans East. New Orleans East, I think, was really developed in the 50s, 60s. So it's pretty suburban. People have big houses, big lots, big driveways. They like to drive around New Orleans East. It happens to be the real estate happens to be a little less expensive. So it's more affordable. People want to live in New Orleans East, right? Because it's more affordable. It happens to be right now, unfortunately, there's a significant amount of crime, which is problematic. And the other issue is that there was no, from a land use perspective and a planning perspective, there was no real sort of like corridor that holds New Orleans East together. So in a lot of places where you have these large sort of suburban areas, you create sort of a central core strip or something where you have a bunch of retail that really supports the neighborhood. There's a couple locations where you have some retail. You've got a really big Walmart on Bullard where the bus is, I think that's the main bus hub. And that's sort of like the center, I would say. But the real center of the whole area is further closer to the Intercoastal Canal. And it's a priority to get people around New Orleans East. There's a lot of old folks who live in New Orleans East who are taking the bus. There's a hospital, there's libraries, there's parks. So not only get around New Orleans East, but also come to the like downtown New Orleans for work, right? A lot of workers are living in New Orleans East and they need to get to work. And it can take 2 hours on transit to get downtown, which is just totally untenable for New Orleans. You can get there in 25 minutes. And so one of the big recommendations is sort of a reworking of that whole bus system in that neighborhood, right? In that area of the town. So they're talking about moving the bus hub, creating a new bus hub. There really isn't one. I just mentioned Walmart, and that's typically where the bus has been before. And that's kind of where the transfer area has been, but there hasn't been a real investment into a bus hub in New Orleans East. And you really need that because you have a ton of ridership. So they are recommending that. They're also recommending circulator buses. Sometimes people just want to go to the Walmart or they want to go, you know, somewhere nearby. They don't need to necessarily go over the high rise, which is this huge bridge over the Intercoastal Canal.
It sounds like you're kind of deconstructing all of the previous norm or norms of what went and just using some data to influence, like using these studies. I mean, it comes back full circle to where you start. You have this urban planning land expertise, and you're just kind of bringing a different focus. I think that's great. I do have a question kind of closer to my world. I'm kind of more IT focused, and I saw an article referencing your chief information officer, Kim LeGroup, and it was launching a program, digital identity program, with a group called MasterCard City Possible. I know Dom and I, we've met those folks before, and so it's just kind of triggered. I'm not sure how close you are to it, but it talks about the promise of connecting benefits, payments, city services, and transportation is one highlighted. Are you close to that? Anything you can share?
I'm not entirely close to that, but I can tell you a little bit about what I know. First, it's a really exciting opportunity. Kim LeGroup is awesome, and she has been spearheading this kind of thing for a long time. The idea is that you would have sort of a city ID or a card whereby you could access city services, but with this one card, right? You could go to the library, you could use a Nord facility, you could take transit. We don't have that capacity right now. In other cities, I think they probably have already figured it out. And I think she spearheaded this partnership with MasterCard, whereby there's a financial ability to actually get cash. As I understand it, I'm going to tell you what I know. I don't know everything.
You'll have to make introductions, and maybe when it's further along, we can have her on the show. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I know that the agreement has been signed and they're working towards implementation. I don't think there's a time frame. I mean, what we see the real value of this is just to support a huge, a large amount of the community that may not have a bank account, that may not have, you know, an ID license or whatever.
Or as well as make it simpler to use the services that you are focused on, which is whether it's bikes or the charging stations or whatnot. If there's one way to get to it and brings more people into some sort of financial ability, makes a lot of sense. That's what we kind of cued in on it. The promise of that is amazing. So
I'd love to connect you with Kim to learn more about it. I think it's a really cool idea. And I hope it gets kicked off in a way that supports transit and wires transit in, because I think it's a must, you know. Totally. The problem with, and y'all might realize this, the problem with New Orleans right now, you know, a lot of cities have like the tap card situation. We don't have that because our fare box, like our fare box material is older, like our hardware. And so we're going to have to update that so we can allow sort of that tap card technology. It's top of mind.
Need some of that $5 billion in infrastructure money to switch out the boxes, I think.
Yeah, the $2.4 billion. Well, that's only for the roads. Yes.
Well, cool. So that's one good idea. But go ahead, Dom.
I was saying another project. It sounds you are tremendously busy.
Yes.
So a lot of things you're leading. This is awesome.
Yeah. So you kind of gave us one idea of Kim as a guest. We do kind of wrap up with a standard question. We know like this whole podcast, Urban Complex, is about building the network of who's doing interesting things in cities. And so thanks for joining us there. But we know that you can't do these things alone. And so we always ask, is there anyone that our guests are particularly appreciative that have helped them along the way? And oftentimes those same people would be great guests on the Urban Complex. So anyone come to mind that you should share besides Kim? And we'll definitely appreciate that introduction.
I mean, I feel like Alex could be a really interesting, if you've talked to LA Metro, he may be an interesting person to talk to at RTA, Regional Transit Authority. The other one at RTA,
that's Alex Wiggins.
Robert Stickney is the director of technology. I forgot his title, but he oversees all of the like technology and data. He might be like the director of data science at RTA. So he is pulling information from a bunch of different systems. And I think he might be an interesting person for you guys to talk to too. If you're looking to get a little bit more technical, Alex is going to be a little higher level.
We don't get too technical. That's one thing. We like to keep it, conversational, and this isn't about the architecture, but we're always open to great stories, that's for sure. So
yeah.
All right, well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Laura O'Brien, Director, Mayor's Office of Transportation, City of New Orleans. Thanks for joining us, Laura. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Laura.
All right, Dom, that was Laura O'Brien with the City of New Orleans Transportation Office. What'd you think?
She was great. Loved her passion and loved the kind of work she's helping to spearhead down in New Orleans. You know, I found it so interesting. You know, we largely, our conversations to date have been kind of really smart city focused, a little bit different, but you know, we've always talked about how to organizationally structure smart city programs. Well, here, this isn't called out as a smart city initiative, right? It's the Office of Transportation. But what they've done is they've pseudo set it up like a smart city's office, right? The mayor came in and elevated this Office of Transportation, essentially removing it from any sort of department and putting it in a position where it can more work horizontally across an organization to drive innovation in transportation and mobility, right? She mentioned it a couple times, to elevate not only the topic of transportation mobility, but the conversation with the community around transportation mobility. So it effectively, as I mentioned, it works as a task force. It works just like all what we've been advocating for, right? Set your smart cities work structure up in a way that it can work across departments. It can be agile, it can be lean, and it can really take on those special projects that usually departments don't have the time, the resources, the staff to take on themselves, right? And so,
and even I think to your point, they worked regionally even beyond the city. I thought the interplay of how that structure worked with the RTA, what kept a regional transit authority, what kept coming to my mind is they're helping that group prioritize what's important with data, with the relationship with the community, with the mayor's focus on solving some unique challenges, but bringing that back to help a different group that may not be completely aligned because they're looking statewide and really focus on key things. And prioritization sometimes is the hardest thing to do, but has the best impact. If you really do have an integrated approach and that you're working on the right things, you get the best outcomes and it changes the game.
Yeah. And just one more thing on that. I mean, you mentioned to kind of, you know, execute on outcomes or to solve challenges, right? Without a freestanding elevated Office of Transportation, that would be very difficult, right? She mentioned that as a result of a climate action plan, probably something that her office didn't have they, you know, that said, we're going to reduce the number of automobile trips by 50%. Now that gets dumped on her to help solve that, right? If that was dumped on a, you know, public works department that is just busy trying to keep the lights
on. Yeah, they get buried and they get stuck, and then it's hard to get out of how things have always worked. And that kind of leads nicely into what I kept seeing come up time and time again, you know, because she's looking at all these different plans. They're trying to link the tie of transportation across the plans, but they're also bringing that fresh perspective. We've heard many of our guests talk about the importance of data. She didn't necessarily call out the data initiative itself, but they always did these kind of studies, and they focused on an area and they collected information. Now, I don't know whether it was quantifiable or qualitative, but they found ways to, again, back to that prioritization, show where they needed to go and then drive. And so, I mean, to reduce automobile trips by 50% in 9 years, I mean, you can tell her eyes got big when I reminded at the end, they got a lot of work to do. And so, but you see how they're layering things on. They've got initiatives where they're bringing bike lanes. They're thinking about car sharing with electronic vehicles and the charging time. She got excited about the electronic bikes, right? Because that shifts how people use those lanes they're investing in. She's also talking about, you know, 5 years still to go on using infrastructure money that came in from Katrina on changing the way the roads and roadways and arterials work. And so there's just all these things layered in. So it fits nicely to that kind of organizational view you see of how they've structured the office. And now they've got these programs that are kind of chipping away. You know, I was at the Digital Government Summit yesterday, the Arizona one, and they're talking about how this 1% mindset, if you do the right things, 1% improvements every day, my gosh, you get this exponential curve of how it's additive over time. And it seems like that's what they're doing. They're really focused on small wins that add up over time into big waves. So I know that's what jumped out to me when she was sharing.
Yeah, I think it's great. And just to highlight that, you know, her approach, right? She mentioned it, take a step back or gather data, analyze, find room for improvement, right? That's a brilliant way to approach it. And sometimes, as you mentioned, it takes an outside voice, right? It's not the public works department doing it themselves. It's, you know, public works working with her or RTA working with her office to give that outside fresh look. So,
you know, you know, one other thing you jumped in on that I wanted to say at the time, but I forgot. And now it's remind me. You talk about how their office operates as kind of this neutral third party kind of identified party, but like the Greater NOLA Foundation, New Orleans Foundation, and that bike share and Blue Crew thing. What I thought was really cool is they got it going, but you know how many times groups get it going and then they hold on, they want to keep it, right? They got it seated and then they backed off and like checked it, like that's normal. Whereas the flip side usually happens, like people hold on to what they created and that's not necessarily the mission. The mission's kickstart, and then back off, right? So I thought that was also a really interesting.
Yeah, no, it gave me I put in my notes to reach out to some of the foundations here to see how we might emulate that model because, incubate it and then spin it off. Let it go on, you know, let it go for things. Brilliant. Yeah. Awesome. So, yeah, great conversation. Thanks for bringing her on. So cracks in the pavement this week. Any good articles for us to chat about?
Yeah, you know, let me bring it up again. I found a cool one. Plus, I love it when they tie into past guest initiatives and our current one. So I found this one. The title is the EPA USDA Select 13 Sites to Help Build Community-Led Food Systems. And, you know, some of the things that they're going to do that resonate are, you know, how do they get local foods, local places? And I immediately came to one of the things that surprised me when we met with Deborah Lamb is that smart food kind of approach they're doing that just sounds like it's such an entrepreneurial ecosystem that they were looking into. Now it's interesting. I don't even see Georgia on this list, which is odd, but hey, it doesn't matter, right? There's all sorts of collaboration. I just found that an interesting place to start. Anything with the food side that jumps out to you?
No, I mean, I'm reading this article. I'm loving it. We'll make sure to put it on our newsletter, but yeah, I love what they're saying here. It's like the local food system and placemaking coming together, right? Integrating those two ideas. And they talk about, you know, a community-owned grocery store that opened last year in Illinois. That's incredible. I mean, I really find this very interesting.
Well, if you really want to bring jobs to people, you give them avenues to produce, right? And then tied to this episode, think about the transportation logistics that needs to happen for this type of thing to happen. The food has to be produced. It has to get to the city. It has to not clog things up. I mean, we've seen that, you know, even some groups are starting to produce food indoors in the city, like taking over some of this distressed malls, whatnot. There's just so much change coming in supply chain, in food production, in transportation logistics. So yeah. It's just exciting.
Well, I mean, it's brilliant. And as you mentioned, it kind of integrates with a lot of our past guests and a lot of our past conversations. I mean, think about it. You know, what was it? A couple weeks ago, we were talking about the new tech that Peachtree Corners was implementing, right? This article talks about how this food system and placemaking ties in with other efforts, including improving community walkability and safety for pedestrians, right? I mean, you're really talking about all these efforts really starting to tie together as a systems of systems approach.
Well, right? And there's another piece near the end of it. It talks about trying to address food insecurity as well. You know, we take a lot for granted, at least I do. Working at Arizona State, it's amazing how many students don't know where their meals are going to come from. And so if in the process of bringing more people into the food production and making it easier to get local food to local use, and you can also get food to people in need. I mean, it's like we've heard a few of our guests recently, including today, including last week, talk about efficiencies. And a lot of this sounds like efficiencies of scale too. So if you can do the food more efficient, like a lot of our food is produced in other countries. And think about the waste that happens. We had another guest, I think Ron was talking about the amount of, like, you have the refrigerated units of the cargo, keeping not the fruit cold, but something else that doesn't need to be cold because it's not smart. And so, like, you have all the spoilage at the docks. It's just crazy. So I think there's a lot of sense, and I think we can see some major change from this type of work.
So many great stories, right?
That's what we're here for in the complex.
Totally. Awesome. Well, great, Chris. Another good week.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Don. And that's a wrap. See y'all.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.